Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, April 18th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. So excited to be coming to you from beautiful New York City, the Big Apple. We're here at the City University of New York for the Cannabis Science and Policy Summit. This is being held by Botec and NYU, particularly Mark Kleiman. And if that's a name that you recognize, then you've been following this show for quite a while, because Mark Kleiman was the head of Botec and the man that was brought in to become Washington State's pot czar, so to speak. He was a consultant for Washington State's implementation of I-502, and you can judge how well that turned out. But this is an interesting summit because this is bringing together an international audience in advance of the United Nations General Assembly Special Session that's taking place this week, the 19th, 20th, and 21st, down at the UN. I'll be there covering that as well, and I'll bring you as much audio as I can from that event. And there are just so many international heavy hitters here. I've run into Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes, Allison Holcomb was here, a number of the MPP staff, all the way Executive Director Rob Campia, former MPP staffer, Steve Fox, former staffer, Dan Riffle, Aaron Smith from the National Cannabis Industries Association is here. Just a whole bunch of really good people, great activists. But also this summit features a lot of the people who are on the other side of this issue. Some names you might recognize, like Rosalie Pakula, the Vice President of the International Society for the Study of Drug Policy. Jonathan Calkins from Carnegie Mellon University. We've got Graham Boyd from the New Approach PAC. We've got Kevin Sabet from Project SAM, and Jeff Zinsmeister, his vice president of Project SAM. So it's not just the raw pro-marijuana events that I'm usually covering. We've got some people at this event here who really don't like marijuana consumption and want to do everything they can from a public policy angle to try to reduce it or at least keep it where it is at this moment. So you'll hear some of their policy proposals, like proposing taxes on marijuana based on potency, like proposing marijuana user licenses with quotas established, all sorts of interesting policy ideas that I'm sure none of us would appreciate from the cannabis consumer's point of view. But it's interesting to find out how the other side views this issue. So today and tomorrow on the show, I'm going to be bringing you highlights from this policy summit. Also, I've got to get you caught up on some highlights from some of the other events that I've been at this week. I attended the Students for Sensible Drug Policy Conference in Alexandria, Virginia. We'll get you some highlights from that. Also, I attended the Washington, D.C. seed giveaway sponsored by DCMJ. We've got some highlights from that event at the White House. Also, I visited the Patients Out of Time Conference in Baltimore, Maryland. Got a chance to sit down with a doctor, a nurse, and a patient. So we'll bring all of that to you over the next 5 days here on the Russ Belville Show. These shows are pre-recorded. I'm unable to bring them to you live because of the time zone difference and because of all of the packed schedule that I've got here while I'm in New York. But we'll bring you all the best coming up here on the Russ Belville Show. So stick around. We're back right after this two-minute break.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
educator, author, and advocate, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, is here to tackle the burning issues.
And I'm here to clear up the myths about cannabis and burn them away with science.
CannabisRadio.com presents a no-holds-barred platform that seeks to redefine and revolutionize the entire scope of the cannabis culture while opening the door for more to join the cannabis crusade.
Dr. Kevin Hill.
You can't ignore the fact that, like alcohol, most people who use don't have a problem. So I think that you need to think about policy in that way while educating people properly about marijuana. I think that's the way to go.
Burning Issues, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up!
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Monday, April 18th, 2016. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has become the 24th state to legalize a comprehensive medical marijuana program. Democratic Governor Tom Wolf signed the bill into law Sunday afternoon, surrounded by a jubilant crowd of supporters at the Capitol building in Harrisburg. The bill's drafters say it could take 2 years to write regulations and get retailers opened, but a provision allows parents to legally administer medical marijuana to their children before the bill takes effect in a month. The bill sets standards for tracking plants, certifying physicians and licensing growers, dispensaries, and physicians. Patients could take marijuana in pill, oil, vapor, ointment, or liquid form, but would not be able to legally obtain marijuana to smoke or grow. Columbus, Ohio. An experimental epilepsy drug made from cannabis plants grown in England is complicating the medical marijuana debate in hospitals and state houses. Epidiolex is a nearly pure extract of cannabidiol, or CBD, with little of the tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, that gets traditional pot users high. CBD products are the current rage in medicinal pot products, and activists fear that if the maker of Epidiolex manages to get FDA approval, it could undercut the political momentum of the medical marijuana movement. The FDA has not yet found any botanical form of marijuana to be safe or effective to treat any disease or condition, spokesman Michael Felberbaum said. If approved, Epidiolex would be the first. Two synthetic cannabinoids, Marinol and Sesamet, are available. FDA approval would allow any doctor to prescribe Epidiolex to any patient, and it would be covered by insurance. No law or ballot issue would be required. Many medical marijuana activists fear Epidiolex's approval will mark the beginning of Big Pharma's takeover of the marijuana plant, undercutting patients' ability to treat themselves as they see fit. Montpelier, Vermont. A Vermont House committee has revived the hopes of marijuana legalization advocates by rewriting a bill that was stripped down by another committee last week. The Ways and Means Committee version restores legalized possession of up to an ounce by adults and adds something not included when the bill passed the Senate, limited home cultivation of up to two plants. The action comes a week after the House Judiciary Committee removed legalization from the bill. It's unknown how the differences between the two House committees will be resolved. Governor Pete Shumlin, a legalization supporter, issued a statement lauding the Ways and Means Committee action. The bill next goes to the budget-writing House Appropriations Committee before a debate in the full House. Denver, Colorado. Colorado is expanding a law limiting pot advertising. The State House gave tentative approval Friday to a bill saying that medical marijuana can't be advertised to people under 21. A similar restriction already exists for recreational marijuana advertisers. Sponsors call the expanded limit a common-sense safeguard to prevent underage pot consumption. The industry does not oppose the bill, though the Colorado Press Association does. The CPA pointed out there is no evidence anyone has ever aimed pot advertising at children. and that it can be problematic to define what content may appeal to those over 21, but also to children. The House must take one more formal vote on the ad restriction before the bill heads to the Senate. Portland, Maine. Maine may become the first medical marijuana state to add addiction treatment as a qualifying condition for medical cannabis use. On Tuesday, the Maine Department of Health and Human Services will be holding a public hearing in response to an activist petition on the issue. Medical marijuana expert Dr. Dustin Sulak told the Portland Press Herald, quote, "We clearly have a major public health issue and we don't currently have a good solution to it. Cannabis alone isn't enough to completely solve this epidemic, but we need a treatment that can replace the opioids," end quote. The plan is likely to meet with opposition from Governor LePage's administration and will be formally opposed at the hearing by the Maine Medical Association and the Maine Association of Psychiatric Physicians, who claim there is no scientific basis for the idea that medical cannabis mitigates addiction. However, numerous surveys of medical marijuana patients find they often reduce or eliminate their need for opiate painkillers. Furthermore, death by opiate overdose in states with medical marijuana access has been found to be up to 25% lower than non-medical marijuana states. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Monday, April 18th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville. With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the New Era.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platshorn's TheSilverTour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at HempInc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from TheSilverTour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at HempInc.com.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Ganjapreneur.com, helping Ganjapreneurs grow.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Welcome back, everybody. Today in our Cannabis Focus, we're taking a look at all the different events that I've been at over the past week or so. It's been a whirlwind tour. We're going to rewind all the way back to last Wednesday, where I was the guest of Super Chronic Cafe as they put on a special Blazers versus Nugs event. That's the Portland Trailblazers versus the Denver Nuggets for the final game of the regular season at the Moda Center. We were in Suite 56 on the VIP suite level, and I got the chance to run into former Portland Trailblazer and NBA All-Star, two-time finals participant, Cliff Robinson, a.k.a. Uncle Cliffy, and I got this interview with him. We are here at the Oregon Cannabis Caucus, National Cannabis Industry Association event, and Uncle Spliffy himself is here, Cliff Robinson. How you doing, Cliff?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. Glad to have you here, and I was just talking with Bernadette about the move to get professional athletes and people involved in athletics to understand the medical aspects of cannabis. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you're doing in that respect.
Well, we're really going to try to focus on the sports medicine side to really try to continue, getting the education out there, because I think that's going to be the most important part as we continue to move forward to knock down the negative around cannabis is really support the findings that we come up with, and really try to really create those findings and be out in front of those things, and really try to validate what it is that we're talking about.
You know, we need to get this education out to the mainstream and to the management, the executives, the NBA, and these other sports leagues. The players themselves seem to get it, but do they get it from the perspective of, oh, weed's just not a big deal, or do they really understand the medical aspects?
Well, that's why we have to continue getting the information out there for them as well, because myself being new to the business, not new to cannabis, but new to the business side, now that all this information is out there, I'm a more educated cannabis consumer and user myself. So I think the more we can continue putting that information out there for them and putting products out there that they're able to test, I think that'll go a long way.
You know, as a former NBA player, I'm sure you've been hit up for lots of different business opportunities. A lot of people want to try to get your name and celebrity involved with something. As you get involved with this cannabis industry, what do you think of the people and the industry itself?
Well, I think it's wonderful because, like I said, all this information that has been, behind closed doors in a black market, so to speak, is now out there available to have a more educated cannabis user and consumer. I think it's wonderful. The wealth of knowledge that has been behind closed doors is now out there for everybody to kind of really take in. And I'm learning stuff new every day. So I'm excited about being a part of the industry.
Now, I understand there's a special event going on tomorrow involving Blazers versus Nugs. How appropriate. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's an event over at the Blazers game. Josh Kincaid from Superchronics organized it. And, it's really to continue doing positive things around cannabis as a whole. And, I'm really excited to be a part of it, especially there at the Motor Center. The Blazers, have opened up their doors to, being more educated as, a business as well. So I'm excited to be a part of it.
I finally get a chance to ask you a non-marijuana question. Hypothetically, NBA Finals, 95-96 Bulls against this year's Warriors. What do you think? How does it go? Jordan versus Curry.
I'm old school.
Oh, yeah?
I think the Warriors have had tremendous success. They're built for today's NBA. They do a great job at playing together, but I'm old school, so I would have to lean towards the Bulls.
I asked this of one person who said, depends on whether we're using the rules from the 90s or the rules from today.
Exactly, but if you use the rules for today, from today, imagine Michael Jordan in this kind of in this kind of system. He played great in a system where everybody's was hands-on. So
Now
if they couldn't touch him, imagine that.
Yeah, but on the other hand, Dennis Rodman would be a little limited.
He would be a little limited, but, he's a Hall of Fame player. Scottie Pippen's a Hall of Fame player. Michael Jordan's arguably the greatest of all time.
And,
so.
And the Warriors coach.
And Steve Kerr was a part of that team, who was a great shooter. So, it's fun to think about that kind of stuff, but, each era is different, so you got to give them all their propers and their respects, and just, I don't compare them.
Right on. Cliff Robinson, the Uncle Spliffy line. Give people any contact or internet information they need to look that stuff up.
We'll be launching our website here soon at Uncle Spliffy, UncleSpliffy.com. You can reach us on Twitter at Uncle Spliffy, Uncle Spliffy Inc., and also on Twitter, Uncle Spliffy Inc., but reach out. There's a lot of information out there, and we're, excited to be a part of the industry.
All right, Cliff, thanks so much for taking some time with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Russ. I appreciate it.
Boot to the head.
Ow, you booted me in the head!
Coming soon to a city near you.
Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
Growing green to generate more green.
Hello to all you happy herbalizers, smiling trippy hippies, and everyone who believes in freedom and tolerance. This is The Grow Show, and I'm Kyle Cushman.
From food to fuel, from remedy to resource.
Welcome my guest, Ed Rosenthal, the guru of ganja. Let me ask you, right now I hear your lighter clicking. Are you smoking indoor or are you smoking sun grown?
What am I smoking? I'm smoking concentrate.
Way to get out of the answer there. So you're truly like the king, right? You just clap your hands and somebody brings you a bowl and you're all set, right?
I wish that were the case.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman, only on CannabisRadio.com. Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here at the Oregon Cannabis Caucus, sponsored by the National Cannabis Industry Association. They're going to be doing these quarterly, and we're here with Sam Chapman, a consultant in the industry. Again, what's your consulting group?
New Economy Consulting.
New Economy, that's right. New Economy Consulting. And didn't you guys just recently come out with some report on the state of the business here?
We did, yeah. We just released the Oregon Cannabis Industry Jobs Report, which shows that we have created thus far 2,156 jobs just in the retail sector. And we decided just to focus on the retail sector because that was the most attainable numbers. We're excited to expand our research into production, wholesale, processing, and ancillary. And we really think that the more that we start to look into how these jobs are being created and how many there are, we can start changing the conversation a little bit with maybe more conservative counties or city councils that may have a stigma around cannabis and start talking about jobs.
Yeah.
And cannabis together, not just cannabis, but as a job creator. Because as we all know, there's an election coming up, and hardly anyone gets reelected without talking about jobs.
So over 2,000 jobs, and these are just retail touching the plant jobs.
That's correct, yes, yes. And we expect this number to continue to rise over the next year or two. It may flatline at year three, but with the expansion of adult sales over the next coming months, new licenses coming online, it's only up from here.
That's fantastic. Have you seen any indication from any of these rural counties in what I like to call West Idaho turning around, starting to realize, hey, we're running out of money. We could use these jobs.
Absolutely. Cannon Beach was one of them. I don't think it was specifically on jobs, but people are really starting to realize that, people voted for Measure 91, quite a few of them.
Yeah.
And, even in places like Lake Oswego, where 50... we reverse engineer the county precinct numbers to figure out how the cities voted. And so 56% of Lake Oswego voters voted yes on Measure 91. And they're going to be putting it on the ballot. And so those are some cities that we think that the people are going to reaffirm their decision to be able to buy cannabis in their hometown. We couldn't be more excited about it.
There was another really interesting report, Oregon Economic Council or whatever they're called, reporting on the cross-border effect between Washington State and Oregon. Kind of this competition between tax rates and availability and so forth. Give me your take on that, and looking to the future with California in 2016, will Oregon suffer the same effect?
Right, it's a great question. So there's a couple of factors there, I think. The first one is that cannabis is an elastic product, which means that when price goes up, demand goes down, and vice versa. And I think that's a really important fact to keep in mind, especially if you're a city council that's thinking about adding some exorbitant tax. And in some areas, 3%, maybe even exorbitant for some people. Maybe they're more rural, they can't, you know, whatever the reason. And so what we're trying to do with the jobs numbers in the report is show that, yes, tax revenue is good, but let's not forget about the underbelly of this industry that's putting food on the table and keeping the lights on and working families' homes. And that's what jobs do more than anything. And so we're really trying to change the conversation, not so much about taxes, but more about jobs, because it's a tangible benefit that the working people of Oregon can take advantage of.
And continues to grow. And again, we're going to have more jobs in the ancillary markets, these ancillary jobs
that, so many,
that supply this industry. But let's do talk a little bit about the tax revenues. I mean, right. Do you have any number figures for how well Oregon's done?
Well, I mean, I think it was just a couple of months ago they published numbers of $3.4 million in tax revenue. So, you know, it's still early again. And, you know, as soon as the OHA decides to kind of get their act together and allow early sales of extracts and edibles, I really think that the new market, the new cannabis market will show up, which is soccer moms and grandparents who want to buy products that don't exist right now or they don't have access to that. You know, some of them will do it for recreational purposes. Other will do it for medicinal. They don't even know it, right? When grandma finds out that she can buy a topical for her arthritis that's not going to get her high, that's going to be a game changer.
I agree. Now, looking forward, you know, with all of the changes we've seen in these past couple of sessions, we've got medical marijuana shops that are eventually going to be able to sell to all customers.
Right.
We've got recreational shops that will be able to sell to patients tax-free. Does this portend a merging of the two markets?
You know, I think it does, and this is obviously a very sensitive topic for a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of people, rightfully so, worried about a lot of the medical provisions that they have today going away or being treated unfairly or being forced into a regulatory environment in which, you know, they may not be able to survive. And I think that there's a lot of things that we need to take into consideration there when we're making these changes in the legislature at the local level. But more than anything, I really think that the legalization of cannabis has done more for the medical market than anything, in that there are, sure, there are 70, maybe 80,000 patients in Oregon registered now. I would be willing to bet that there are twice as many people who would love to be able to use medicinal cannabis for medicinal reasons that have never been part of that program, that are going to benefit and feel comfortable now saying, okay, I don't have to be part of a program, and I can use this medicinally on my own terms without having to sign up for something and wait, you know, a 3 months for a car.
And pay hundreds to a doctor and another couple hundred to the state.
That's right.
Sam Chapman from New Economy Consulting. If people are interested in these jobs reports, these white papers you guys are putting out, how can they get a hold of them?
Absolutely. The website is pretty simple. www.cannabisjobsreport.com. You can download it for free. Share
Fantastic.
With your friends.
Sam Chapman, thank you so much, and have yourself a great event.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Voober vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Voober vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be. The Voober way.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health. who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times Magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Sure.
All right.
We're here. That ice cream.
Let's go to the ice cream. I'm heading to the ice cream. Here, take my arm there.
Okay.
I'm here with Elvi Musica, one of the remaining federal medical marijuana patients. How's the conference, Elvi?
Very educational. Very mind feeling.
Any new stuff that's really stuck with you from this conference?
No, it's pretty much reviewing so much that's come out late. You're still dealing with your endocannabinoid system and all the connections in your brain and how it. All the things that you can do with cannabis. It's just reaffirming all the things I've been learning for 41 years. But this last 5 years is just like more and more stuff coming out. It's more and more exciting.
Now, you're still in the state of Oregon for
I'm
your
still
residence.
In Oregon.
How are things for you in Oregon?
Oregon keeps changing all the time, but I think we got the best laws of all, and I think we're going to be all right.
I think so, too.
I think so, yeah.
And I know that you sing from time to time. Any new songs? Any new records?
No new records.
No new records?
Playing with a couple of things with a guitarist friend of mine, but we haven't done anything professional with it at all.
Well, how do you feel now that the federal government's starting to talk about maybe they'll reschedule? And they seem like they're finally coming around after treating you for how many years now?
I've been on this program for 28 years. Will be 28 in October.
And they've never asked you once how it's working.
They make my doctor write reports every year, and they have never published any of us that I know of.
Wow.
I don't think even my doctor knows what's going on with the rest of the patients. No, nobody knows. That's the whole idea. Keep us ignorant, then they can control us.
That's right.
Ignorance blinds us, and if we can't see where we're going, we don't go, do we?
That's right.
That's what they think. I'm here anyway.
You're doing great, Elvi. We always appreciate seeing you, and you're such a strong activist and voice for us. We love you.
Thank you. I love you, too, and I love the work you do, and all of you are parts of a huge puzzle that I'm just a little part of, and I'm so glad of the picture that's coming together.
Oh, that's so
great.
Listen,
how do I get upstairs? I got to go get my cane and a coat
so I
can get out of here.
Okay, let's find out. We'll be back right after this, folks. Hi, everyone. Radical Russ here at the Patients Out of Time Conference, 10th Annual Clinical Therapeutics Conference here in Baltimore, Maryland. And we're here at the desk for the American Cannabis Nurses Association. Tell folks your name and tell folks about the ACNA.
This is Eileen Konieczny. I'm president of the American Cannabis Nurses Association. We're a 501c3 non-for-profit professional nursing organization going out and actually trying to reach a subspecialty in cannabis nursing. So we are going to be launching our online core curriculum on 4/20.
Perfect timing.
We're really excited. It's going to enable nurses to get 8 continuing education credits and at the end of it, a competency in cannabis nursing. And it covers the gamut of everything from the history of why cannabis is the way it's being treated, dosing and advocacy, everything a nurse needs to know about, being able to advocate on it on behalf if they're in a non-legal state, or being able to help their physicians better recommend it and use it as a real medicine.
That's great. Have you had to deal with any conflicts with the traditional nursing associations out there?
No, the ANA actually supports this. They've supported this for, and I don't have the date, but they've supported the education of nurses about medical marijuana, because they know that patients are using it and they need to be educated on what it does.
Nurses always have seemed to me to be further ahead in this than the doctors have been. Do you think that's true?
I think that's true. We're the foot soldiers. We're with the patients every day. And once you learn about the medicinal benefits or the science behind what cannabis does, you can't help but try and get this into the hands of the patients.
There's a lot of talk about the DEA possibly addressing rescheduling of cannabis. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
It's definitely a double-edged sword. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm hoping, if you look at the CARES Act.
Yeah.
And you look how, they say that they're going to leave the state programs alone. That's hopeful.
Yes.
But, if it really goes strict pharma, then there's issue with patient access, and then the fact that it'll actually work, because we all know that when you strip away it down to just a THC or a CBD, it doesn't work as well. So we completely advocate for whole plant medicine. Yeah. And so I don't know.
Yeah,
it'll be really interesting.
It's frightening to me, because when I hear the talk about possible rescheduling to Schedule 2, and I think, you mean like meth, cocaine, and OxyContin?
Right. So, but there's a part in there that, you know, it's gonna help with research, and okay, so that's good, and okay, and then as always, you know, they say it's a step in the right direction. Okay, that's good too, but it I'm afraid what it might do for the patients.
Yeah.
It really should be descheduled.
Absolutely.
Completely.
Deschedule it. So if people want more information on the ACNA, how can they find you online?
So we're at www.AmericanCannabisNursesAssociation.org. It's a really long one, so we're really sorry about that.
It's the longest website ever. AmericanCannabisNursesAssociation.org. You'll find it, folks.
Thank you so much
for your time.
Thanks a lot, Russ.
And have yourself a great conference.
You too.
We're here at the 10th annual conference for cannabis therapeutics, sponsored by Patients Out of Time. We're at the Baltimore Harbor Hotel, and I'm sitting at the desk with Dr. David Behrman, MD, author of Drugs Are Not the Devil's Tools. Capitalize not
exactly
the devil's tools. How are you doing, Dr. Behrman?
I'm doing just fine, and I want to thank you very much for mentioning my book up in Portland there to the, was it the Normal chapter that you're working with? Yeah, that's great.
It's a fantastic set of books. I've often said to people, like, if you've already bought Jack Herer's Emperor Wears No Clothes, this is the next set of books that you need to get, because it fills in all those other gaps that were left out.
And I'm going to use that in my advertising.
Okay.
You know, there's no greater compliment than being compared to Jack's book.
You know? Oh, yeah. So tell people, because it's two volumes here, so explain why there's two separate volumes and what they're going to find in each.
Well, the reason that there's two separate volumes is my publisher told my layout person, you can make the internal margin either 3/4 of an inch or 1 inch. He made it 3/4 of an inch, and the book is too long. So we're actually going to be coming out with a single volume late this summer. We've edited it. It's going to be newly laid out. But right now, the first volume goes from the Dark Ages through 1969. It's the idea with the book is to place cannabis and the way we approach that in the frame of a long history of using drug laws to marginalize, discriminated against people, and also to take advantage of drugs as a way of making money. And basically, it's turned out to be a control mechanism for the ruling classes in terms of enriching them and also marginalizing people who are them. And, you know,
yeah,
we've all been them sometime in the history of the world.
You're one of my favorite thems.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, no, we're us, aren't we? Us, them are them.
Them are them, and we are us. And, you know, this was corroborated recently in that Harper's Magazine piece where Ehrlichman, the public policy advisor to Nixon, came out right out and said it. Look, we did this so we could infiltrate the hippies and the blacks.
Exactly. And that actually is mentioned in my book. And an even deeper analysis of that was done by Dr. Sunil Agarwal, who wrote an excellent article on the Nixon tapes and mentioned what Ehrlichman had to say, and also talked about Nixon being angry at the directors of NIMH or NIH during the 60s. One was Stanley Yalies, the other one is Burt Brown, and when asked about what would be the appropriate punishment, they said, oh, something like a traffic ticket.
Yeah.
And Nixon wanted to fire Brown, but he realized that Brown was a friend of Elliot Richardson, and Elliot Richardson was the head of HEW at the time and wasn't going to fire his friend.
Right.
And that was part of the motivation, as I get it from Dr. Agarwal's article, for developing the National Institute of Drug Abuse, to get this out of the hands of the scientists and put it in the hands of people who had more of a criminal justice orientation.
Gotcha. It's all beginning to make sense. It's all in these two-volume set, Drugs Are Not the Devil's Tools. People looking for this online, where would they find it?
We have our own website. You can go to the drugsarenotthedevilstools.com. Or you can go to my website, davidbehrmanmd.com. And Behrman is spelled just like it sounds, B-E-A-R-M-A-N. comes in black and white and color. The black and white is $30 per volume, so that's $60 for both of them, and the colored is $45 per volume. And the only difference is the colored is prettier. They have exactly the same...
Same content.
The same content. But as we're sitting here at the conference here at Patients Out of Time, I was pleased that everything that was covered this morning, where they talked about the terpenes and the cannabinoids and the endocannabinoid system, all of that material is covered in my book. This
is
a great foundation book to give you an idea of the history of drug policy, which goes way back to the witch hunts. And, I mean, that's very appropriate since cannabis has been a part of the witch hunts since sometime in the 1940s. And what I'm hoping is that if not the book itself, the information in the book will get out there, because we still have way, way too many physicians who have no idea about the long history of cannabis as a medicine and about its remarkable applications today.
No doubt about that. And I also know that you're strongly involved with the American Academy of Cannabinoid Medicines.
Right.
And what's the latest there?
Okay, well, thank you very much for bringing that up. The American Academy of Cannabinoid Medicine is an effort to try to recognize those doctors that are practicing good quality medicine, and sort of by its very existence to marginalize those physicians who are practicing minimalist medicine when it comes to recommending cannabis. The, you know, the guys who pull up the trailer to the cannabis expo and you can see the line move in front of their trailer.
Yeah.
That undermines the seriousness with which we should take cannabinoid medicine. We continue to get new members. We're a very frugally funded organization. So if anybody listening to your program wants to promote good quality medicine in the cannabinoid medicine field, go to our website, which is aacmsite.org, aacmsite.org. Let me know if you are interested in contributing money, because you will really put forth getting this front and center before medical professionals the way it's supposed to be. We have done a couple of continuing education activities, and we have sort of dimly in the future, we've approached the Veterans Administration in Long Beach, and they have some interest, but you know how it is. It's not easy to get the government to change, even when you have people that are interested in. And then Greg Carter, who is busier than a one-armed paper hanger, is the co-director of the St. Luke's Institute for Rehabilitation in Spokane. And he has said, hey, let's put on a conference up here in Spokane. But beyond him expressing his interest, we haven't really gotten started on that. So I'm going to be presenting a survey that we did, or an extraction of data from 300 charts, 100 from each of three cannabinoid medicine physicians, which is a beginning. It's to lay a foundation for looking at what we should study more in terms of the clinical application. And basically what we found is what an old clinical medicine professor of mine said. He had a thick Austrian accent, and he said, if you diagnose common disease commonly and rare disease rarely, you'll commonly be right and rarely be wrong.
And well put.
So what we found with the use of cannabis as a medicine, it's commonly used for common disease, and more rarely do you find rare diseases. And, you know, you take a look, and in our study we found about 1 or 2% of the patients had migraine headaches, and the same had seizures. And that's because not everybody and his brother has epilepsy.
Right.
But everybody and his brother does have pain, which was the number one reason that we found for people using cannabis. So I hope that people are interested in the American Academy of Cannabinoid Medicine, because we're trying really hard to get the medical profession to recognize that this is an important medicine, and that it's important to take it seriously and to approach it the same way we would other serious therapeutic modalities.
I've been asking everyone at the conference their take on the recent talk about DEA and rescheduling possibly happening. What do you think about that possibility?
I think they wouldn't be talking about it if they weren't serious, and obviously they have to do something if they're going to approve Sativex the product for multiple sclerosis, or Epidiolex, the product for seizure disorder. So I think they're going to do it. And my only concern now is we've been demanding legalization and regulation, and I just hope that, you know, be careful what you ask for, you might get it. You know, regulation and legalization is like anything else, the devil is in the details. So I think the general idea is a good idea, and I'm very concerned about the government because their track record is abysmal in the area of drug regulation. Almost every action that they have taken subsequent to the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906 has been an abysmal failure.
Wow. Strong words from Dr. David Behrman here at the Conference for Clinical Therapeutics. Patients out of time. The book is Drugs Are Not the Devil's Tools. Volume 1, Volume 2. You can get it black and white or color. Check out drugsarenotthedevilstools.com. Check out American Academy for Cannabinoid Medicine, AACMsite.org. Dr. Behrman, thanks for talking to us.
Hey, it's a great pleasure. Thank you, Russ.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. We are at the SSDP 2016 conference, and I've run into two giants of reform. We've got Eric Sterling from the SSDP Board of Directors. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Cannabis Radio. It is such a thrill to be here with Russ Belville. Hi, Cannabis Radio. This is Eric Sterling, and it is such a thrill to be here with Russ Belville covering this this exciting conference of students.
That's right. And we got Chris Crane here as well. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Great to be here and back home with SSDP.
What do you think about the turnout here for this SSDP conference? Looks like the biggest ever.
It is the biggest ever. Yeah, I hear there's about 550 people, 350 students, kids from like 13 countries. It's amazing. It's one of the more inspiring events I think I've ever been to.
You may be the first SSDP alumni I ever met so many years ago. What keeps you busy now?
Today I'm working with Forefront Ventures, my company, and we work with dispensary applicants and operators around the country, and then a few other ventures in the medical cannabis industry.
Fantastic. Now, Eric, you've got a ton of perspective on this, having worked in reform for so long. What do you think about the latest changes? We're starting to see, you know, ungas is happening, and it seems to be an awakening to the need to change these laws.
It's been enormously exciting, Russ. I'm a state medical cannabis commissioner in Maryland, and was able to play a constructive role in creating the Maryland system. And we have right now 1,000 applications for licenses that we're evaluating. You know, we're going to have medical cannabis in Maryland.
Okay, it's so loud.
We're doing an interview over here. Could you hold on for just 1 minute, please? Thank you.
The changes.
Change is happening at a pace that is impossible for someone like me to contemplate. You know, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I can't keep up with it. Internationally, domestically, so much is happening in so many states. Even the federal government, the obstacles are breaking down. You know, with the appropriations bills that are blocking DEA from enforcing the law against medical cannabis, it's mind-boggling that Republican-controlled Congresses are voting this way. Mm. You know, even you know the DEA administration are now seriously thinking about rescheduling. We'll see what that means, but that they're saying this publicly. Again, there's a sign. You know, this is not like, you know, a court has held a gun to their head and said, you know, you have to stop screwing around with some litigant. It's the administration moving forward. So that this is an incredibly exciting time for young people, for people of any age who are interested in the liberty to use cannabis, the liberty to medicate themselves in an appropriate way, to see what the future is producing for us right now.
Now, I'll get to your perspective from both of you on this. I'll start with Eric. Pennsylvania looks like they're going to pass, you know, the governor's going to sign their latest medical cannabis law. However, it follows in the footsteps of Minnesota and New York, no whole plant, non-smokable stuff. Is there a fear that as we're getting some of this, the reluctance of the drug warriors to give up on this drug war, that maybe some of it's predicated on their knowledge that, oh, now we can pharmaceuticalize it and keep control that way?
I think that the risk of pharmaceuticalization of the industry, in some sense, is real. I think that it's a concern that we need to keep in mind and to work against. I think that the reality is that the effectiveness and the value, the preferability of whole cannabis is going to assure that the market itself is going to keep it that way. You know, Pennsylvania's law is simply not the end of the line in Pennsylvania for medical cannabis right now.
Is that...
I largely agree, although, I wouldn't necessarily say that pharmaceuticalization of cannabis is inherently a bad thing. I think the way that they're going about it is pretty terrible. But, you know, there is going to be a need for pharmaceuticalized cannabinoids. There are certain conditions that they're just not going to be treatable by whole cannabis and things like, you know, if you're talking about alternatives to chemotherapy or treatments for neurodegenerative diseases, like these are going to have to be heavily, not necessarily synthesized, but it's going to need to be pharmaceuticalized for these to be really effective. But that's not what's happening in Pennsylvania and New York and Minnesota. What they're basically doing is medical marijuana under the guise of something that kind of sort of looks pharmaceutical. and that to me is really a sort of a stopgap measure for states that are a little too scared to go all the way when it comes to medical marijuana. And so this is something that to them feels more like what they're used to when it comes to medicine. So I can understand from a legislator standpoint why they're going this route. I just think I think when you're talking about making medical cannabis available to patients in need, you need to give them a wide spectrum of options, and taking away the option that the majority of patients use seems like a really bad idea. All that said, I do think this is sort of a stopgap, because we're going to see, in November likely, five more states or four or five more states legalized for adult use. We're going to see more regular medical marijuana bills. And I think it's going to be really hard for states like New York and Minnesota and Pennsylvania, 3-4 years down the road, to say, yeah, this is a really effective system, when you've got full legalization sweeping the nation and you've got, real medical marijuana all around the country. And eventually it's going to have to shift to either real medical marijuana or just straight up legalization, which sort of resolves the issue as well. Then you have the whole range of products, from whole smoke products to compounded formulas and oils and everything else, and that'll happen under legalization, and that will resolve it. And then the pharmaceutical companies can create these really targeted pharmaceutical drugs as well, just not in this sort of silly state sanctioned system of pseudo pharmaceuticalization.
Yes. Now, the most recent polls have shown, overwhelming majority support for marijuana legalization, and especially medical marijuana legalization. Yeah. But when you look at any other drug, it never breaks above 8 or 9%. So as we turn the page from cannabis legalization into other drug reforms, especially when these drugs may not be safer than alcohol, how do we tackle that?
That's a great question. I think that's really the million-dollar question for the movement now. One thing that does concern me is if we're successful in legalizing cannabis without continuing the conversation around these other drugs, it might be a really long time before we're able to make significant progress when it comes to dealing with drugs that, you know, non-cannabis drugs, drugs some folks would consider hard, you know, quote unquote hard drugs. You know, people are a lot less sympathetic. There are way fewer users. So while everybody knows a cannabis consumer, not everybody knows a heroin user. Not everybody knows a cocaine user. Or if they do, they probably don't know that person's a cocaine user. If people are less likely to talk about it. You know, you don't have cocaine fest like you have hemp fest.
They're not wearing a cocaine t-shirt.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's just not that, it's not that socially acceptable. So I worry that if we take marijuana out of the equation entirely, that we're leaving a fairly vulnerable population, people who may have real addiction issues, in a really difficult position. So, I think we need to start thinking about creative ways to manufacture, produce, and distribute so-called hard drugs, non-cannabis, currently illegal non-cannabis drugs. I don't think that we're ever going to see, cocaine dispensaries the way that we see marijuana dispensaries, but we might see something in between it being sold at sort of a pharmacy and over the counter, something that's a little bit more controlled, maybe something that's prescription based. But certainly we need to take the manufacturing and distribution of these substances out of the hands of the black market and criminals, put them into something that's more heavily regulated, and make sure that we're putting real money into treatment for those who need it, so that those who do wind up having issues can get treatment without stigmatization and without being marginalized in society. And, I don't know exactly how we do that. I don't think anybody knows exactly how we do that. It's why these conferences are so important, that we have folks coming together to talk about how we handle the post-prohibition era for non-cannabis.
What do you think about that, Eric?
I was struck by what I thought was this, even with Chris's caveats, he, I think, puts his finger exactly on, the heart of it, figuring out what are the systems of regulated control that we need to develop. I think there will be experimentation. He is correct about the hurdles of fewer users and the stigma. But as he was describing this, it was very important, I think, for our movement to recognize we've got to be talking about legalization of all drugs, that the public health need is so essential. Drug users' lives matter. Drug users' lives matter. And the way that you end up protecting them is through a system of legal access, with ending the stigma, ending the shame, and, of course, ending the criminal supply. So teaching people, what are the safer ways to use drugs, making them available. Kind of model is, to Radical Russ, this may sound like a real off note, is what I call the stockbroker model, which is, when you go to a stockbroker with your investment, they are barred from sort of making the most risky investment. They're supposed to begin by sort of saying, well, do you have a savings account? Do you own your home? Do you have a mortgage? What are the most reasonable incremental steps for dealing with this, rather than sort of saying, let us put us in this high, high risk thing? And so in my model for drug use, someone would say, well, it's the cocaine dispensary, and it's the cocaine and drug dispensary. And somebody says, well, I'm here because I want to start using cocaine. And so the answer is, so what are your objectives? What do you want to get out of this cocaine use? So a guy says, well, I'm having trouble getting erections. Well, okay, maybe cocaine's not your first treatment. maybe that's not the first drug to deal with that,
Have you tried whiskey?
or maybe you're drinking too much whiskey.
That's right.
So that the idea is, just as the stockbroker is governed by private regulation, there's a private association, there's a trade association with ethics, there's insurance liability, as well as sort of the government regulation, that we create an sort of integrated face of controls, so that the counselor, it's really a counseling relationship. You want to go to someone who can counsel you in the use of these drugs in ways that make sense for your objectives. And if all the drugs are legal, then they sort of say, well, maybe you want a different kind of stimulant. Maybe you don't need this at all. To the extent that you want people to be as educated at the time they're actually sort of saying, okay, this is what I'm going to use, because now I understand what it's going to do for me, then you've got a system that makes sense.
Thank you so much, guys. And if you have any
contact info or websites you want to tell people about?
My website's cjpf.org. That's for Criminal Justice Policy Foundation, where I've been the executive director for many years.
Sure. You can check us out at forefrontventures.com. That's the number 4, and then frontventures.com. That's our website. And I'll put in the plug. I'm going to go to schoolsnotprisons.com or ssdp.org and support the great work that Students for Sensible Drug Policy is doing.
All right. And they've turned out great people like you, Chris, and you know that they're going to turn out plenty more. Thanks, guys, for the interview, and have a great conference.
Russ, thank you.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.